Well, I want to say hello again to everybody here in the East, or if you're in the West, or maybe watching online today. We're so glad you're here. And we've got also an amazing group of people at Browns Bridge checking in with us today. So hello, everybody at Browns Bridge. We also have one of our newest churches called Decatur City Church that's with us. So we're really, really excited about that. We're a network of churches, and it's great for me to be able to be here with you. My name is Clay, in case you missed it the first time, no problem at all. But I am one of our pastors here on staff, and it's a privilege for me to get to stand here and conclude this amazing series with you. It's been a busy last week for my wife and I. About 9 days ago, we gave birth to our fourth child. His name is Cooper. So that's really, really exciting. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You guys are like, way to go. That's awesome. He's our fourth child. So honestly, I mean, we barely gave him a name. We threw him in a room and said, good luck. You know, you've heard Jim Gaffigan, you know, he says having a fourth child is just imagine you're drowning and someone throws you a baby, you know, and that's what it's like. So that's kind of the way we feel. So I'm not going to do what most new dads do, which is just to be obnoxious and show you picture after picture after picture. I mean, if I had a huge plasma on stage, I would probably do that. But since we do, why don't I show you a few? So this is him. Here's another one of Jake, our older son, and then Cooper. There he is. Look at that right there. Is he not so cute? My goodness. I mean, you know, people say like, oh, all babies look the same. You know, not this baby. This baby has got something going on. You know, he's got the good stuff. So, no, we are thrilled. We are really, really thrilled. Thrilled to be new parents, but I will warn you, I haven't had a lot of sleep because I'm a new dad, and so, you know, I'm a little punch drunk, you know, so if this gets out of hand, or if I say anything that offends anyone, or that's mildly inappropriate, you can blame it on the fact that we have a 9-day-old. So at the very least, today should be engaging, I would imagine, so hopefully you will not fall asleep. Hey, this series, honestly, this series has been incredible. Has it not been amazing? I mean, I feel like Andy Stanley is literally the greatest preacher on planet Earth. And I'm so grateful. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm so grateful to get to be a part of our churches where we get to hear from such an amazing, amazing communicator and always just bring in a new angle, something fresh, something different. And so we've been taking this idea of resolution and Andy's just unpacked it and said, hey, look, most people ask the question at the beginning of the year, what should I do about me? You thought I was going to throw the pics up again at my kid, you know, just be like, have you guys seen my child yet? Have I showed you that? Anyway, most people ask this question, what should I do about me, right? I need to lose weight. I need to budget my... I need to balance my budget. I need to quit, you know, eating out so much. Or I need to read more books. Or I need to write more personal notes. Or stop watching so much TV. Or I need to watch more TV. I don't know what it is. But the question is, what should I do about me? That's what most people ask around this time of the year. Andy said, you know, that's really such a lame question. I mean, honestly, a much better question is this question right here. What breaks your heart? What breaks your heart? What a powerful question that each of us should, at some point in our life, sit down and think about and process and try to figure out, yeah, what is it that breaks my heart? And he said this, because if you really want to become a better person, do something to make the world a better place. Isn't that such a better resolution than just I need to lose 10 pounds or I need to quit eating out so much or I need to start eating out more? Whatever it is, this is such a better resolution. To say, I want to try to make the world a better place by figuring out what breaks my heart and then doing something about it. So if you missed the hashtag, we've been using this hashtag, my better resolution, right? Hashtag, you know, not on Facebook, but on Instagram or Twitter, you can use the hashtag. In fact, if you haven't searched the hashtag on Twitter or Instagram, it's fascinating just to read what people are saying. I genuinely think in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, we're going to look back on this series and we're going to be blown away at all the things that have changed about our world just because of this series. There are people who are going to start organizations or start nonprofits. They're going to try to rescue children or adopt a child or foster a child or help figure out how to help someone else's dream come true, all because of this series. It's really been amazing. And I would imagine that there's some of you maybe who you've sat through the whole series and maybe you've caught some of it online or watched some of it on our app. And maybe you've been inspired, you've been engaged, but maybe you would say, you know what? I don't know what breaks my heart. Maybe you would say, you just don't know what breaks your heart. And maybe you'd say, hey, I'm really busy. I've got a lot going on. I mean, it's enough to keep everything juggled in my life. I haven't had time to really sit down long enough to think about what breaks my heart. Or maybe you've got some other things that you're interested in, you know? It's NFL playoff time, you know? Bachelor's on. Maybe you're worried about, like, is he going to find his little farm girl or not? I mean, And whatever it is, you're probably thinking, like, I don't know. I just don't know what it is that actually breaks my heart. I mean, a lot of things I'm worried about or concerned about or frustrated with, but I don't know what breaks my heart. I mean, maybe you would just say, I don't know. Maybe you'd, I'm not going to admit it in church, you know, but I guess I just don't know. Or maybe there's some of you who you would say, you know what? I don't know what to do about my broken heart. Maybe some of you know exactly what breaks your heart, but you don't know what to do with your broken heart. Maybe you're thinking, that feels like a mountain. That feels like a year's worth of work, and I got 15 minutes this week. Or I've got an hour or two to figure out how I can solve this huge problem. I don't know what to do with my broken heart. If this is you, if you would say, you know what, love the series, inspired by it, what breaks your heart? What a great question. But maybe if you would say that you don't know what breaks your heart or you don't know what to do with your broken heart, today is for you. I'm telling you, today is specifically designed for you. I want to help you find an easy way to figure out what breaks your heart and to know exactly what to do with it. Andy kicked this series off with this Old Testament figure, week one. Does anybody know what Old Testament figure he started with in week one? Just shout it out. Or whisper it. That would be fine too. Yeah. Nehemiah. That was his name. I think I caught it or didn't. I'm not sure. But Nehemiah, that was his name from the Old Testament, historical figure. Nehemiah wrote down his memoirs or had someone transcribe his memoirs. And now we have it. We have it in the collection of Old Testament books. It's called the Book of Nehemiah, how appropriate enough, right? Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king. You don't like your job? Try being the cupbearer to the king, right? Every day, not sure if I'm going to live or not. Going to eat well, but not sure I'm going to live. So that's the way Nehemiah's life went. He was a servant to the king, Artaxerxes, around the 5th century B.C. Nehemiah had this passion. He had this burden. His heart was broken, as we see in Nehemiah chapter 1. He wanted to rebuild the wall. If you would have asked him, Nehemiah, what breaks your heart? He would have said, easy, that wall. The wall that is in ruins. It's embarrassing. It's not helpful. It's an eyesore. It's causing us to be exposed to all kinds of threats that we don't need to be. The wall being in ruins, that's what breaks my heart. So in Nehemiah 2, he says this. So then I said to them, you see the trouble? He says, we're in trouble. You see the trouble we're in? Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. He says, the wall being torn down, that's what's frustrating me. So he urges everyone. He pleads with everyone, come, let us build this wall in Jerusalem. He says, you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. Come on now, let's rebuild this wall and we will no longer be in disgrace. He knew that the wall was going to be helpful for everyone. He knew that rebuilding the wall provided a few things. It provided a safer community, right? He said, hey, if we would have this wall, we wouldn't have to feel always so exposed or so threatened to our enemies or to any kind of attack. We would have a safer community. We'd have a better community. We'd be able to have better relationships with each other. I'd be able to go shopping and not have to worry about whether or not there was going to be someone there that was going to cause trouble. He said the wall would help with that. The wall would also just provide for us a place to live. I mean, I have a place to live, but I don't really enjoy it in Jerusalem because there's no protection around us. So he just knew, hey, this is really important. And so in Nehemiah 2, it continues. He says this. He says, so I told them about the gracious hand of my God that was on me and what the king had said to me. And so all the people rallied together and said, well, then let's start rebuilding. And so they began the work. That's how the book starts. That's how his memoir starts. He says, I went, I pleaded the king, would you please let me go work on this? I went and rallied the troops. I told everyone, I cast the vision. I said, this is what we got to do. We've got to rebuild this wall. It's a disgrace. It's embarrassing. And it shouldn't be. That's what was breaking his heart. Then he gets everyone involved. And in 52 days, they rebuild the wall. And if you were to read Nehemiah, which I hope that you will do, you go to chapter 1, inspiring. Chapter 2, oh my goodness, so motivating. Chapter 3, reads like a phone book. It's going to trip you up. I'm telling you, you're going to get to chapter 3, and it's going to read like the credits to an HGTV show. I mean, you get to the end, and it's like, and so-and-so used a handsaw, and then so-and-so used a jigsaw, and then so-and-so, he carried the bricks. I mean, it just like person by person by person. And it, honestly, if you try to read through the whole book, you might just stumble at chapter 3. But I want us to look at chapter 3 for just a few minutes today, because I think it, as we unpack chapter 3, inside of it, we're going to see something that's very interesting and quite helpful to those of you that would say, I don't know what breaks my heart. Or for those of you that would say, I don't know what to do about my broken heart. It's interesting the way Nehemiah assigns roles. What he does is, you begin to read the chapters, he does what most people would do, right? He has all these people from outside of Jerusalem who are coming in to help. So people from Jericho are coming in to help. People from little towns like Tekoa was coming in to help. And he would assign them. He'd say, you work on the dung gate, literally. He would say, you work on the east gate. You work on the west gate. You work on the wall right next to them. But I want you to pay attention to the way he assigned the people in Jerusalem for what he assigned them to do, the people that were living there in Jerusalem. Chapter 3, verse 28. Check this out. This is interesting. Above the horse gate, which if you could read Hebrew like I can, you would know this is the gate the horses come through. The priests made repairs each in front of his own house. Can we say that together? Just this last line, in front of his own house, all of us together. If you're online, if you're at Brownsbridge, Decatur City, in the West, wherever you are, can we say all together now, you ready? In front of his own house. In front of his own house. Some of you were like, and? No, this is extremely important. He assigned the people living in Jerusalem. He goes, what do you do? I'm a priest. Can't you tell by the way I'm dressed? You know, you can imagine a priest. I don't know. Just kind of think about the Pope, what the Pope wears. It's very similar to what priests wore back then. Long robe, some kind of headgear, some kind of like sweet Birkenstocks. And these priests are out there figuring out in front of their home, going, well, Nehemiah, stepping out their doorway. You know, I got a little 800 square foot efficiency. It's wonderful for me. I'm stepping outside. Hey, Nehemiah, when you get a chance, hey, anything I can do to help? Where would you like for me to help? And Nehemiah just says, oh, just you? Oh, yeah, just work on what's right in front of you. He does this to the priests. He does this to pretty much everyone, every other occupation. He doesn't say, I want all the attorneys to go over here. Y'all are going to work on this. I want all the teachers. Y'all are going to come over here. If you're coach, you're okay, great. I'm going to have you right here. No. He says, look, I don't really care what your occupation is. I want you to just work on what's right in front of your house. And we notice that their occupation didn't influence their involvement. Even the priests got involved right in front of their house. Continues. Next to them, Zadok, son of Immer, made repairs opposite his house. Zadok steps out and says, hey, Nehemiah, yeah, I'm on a corner. Which one do you want? He goes, just do the one opposite of your house. It's like, perfect, got it, no problem. Do you think Zadok cared about the wall? We don't know. It doesn't say, and Zadok was passionate about wall building. It doesn't say, and Zadok was amazed, had dreamed since he was a kid of getting to build a wall. No, it doesn't say that. Maybe Zadok was like a computer programmer and was like, I'm not really into walls, you know? I write code for software that runs robots that makes walls. I don't really do wall building. Nehemiah's going, I don't really care if you care about it or not, quite honestly. He continues, he says, next to him was Shemaiah, son of Shechaniah, the guard at the east gate, also made repairs. We see that their conviction or lack thereof, it didn't influence their engagement. It didn't matter what occupation they were. It didn't matter if they were burdened, they still got busy. It didn't matter how they felt about it. He says, no matter what you do, no matter who you are, I want you to just figure out where you live. That's pretty easy to do because that's where you live. And then just look right out in front of you. And I want you to work on what's right in front of you. Next to him was Hananiah, son of Shelemiah. I'm making this up as I go. And Hanun, the sixth son of Zalaph, repaired another section. Next to them, check it out, Meshullam, son of Berechiah, made repairs opposite his living quarters. Evidently, Meshullam doesn't have a house. He just has his living quarters. That's okay. This is no problem. You just work on what's right in front of you. Seems like his strategy was the same strategy that I have around Christmas time. You guys ever had an experience around Christmas time where you're kind of debating, am I going to do the lights or not? You know, like, and then you kind of have to gauge, like, am I going to go all in? Or am I just going to kind of throw some in the bushes and a couple candles and that's it, you know? And then, I don't know if this has ever happened to you. This typically is what happens in our neighborhood. But my neighbor, who's an amazing guy, he'll throw his lights out there. And it's spectacular. I mean, it is just like National Lampoon quality. I mean, it's amazing. Like, he turns on his lights at night and we're like, wow, it's like Kramer living next to the roasters, right? I mean, like, we can barely see, like, it's amazing. And then the guy next to me as well, just amazing, like throwing those blanket lights like all over his yard, you know, covering his whole roof. It's ridiculous. And so I was like, well, I guess you guys have decided for me, right? Because I'm going to look like the bum who has no lights in our house, so I better throw some out there because I don't want there to be a wall here and a wall there and go, oh, what happened to the Scroggins home? They didn't really participate this year with the neighborhood, right? I would imagine that's how they felt. They're going, hey, Nehemiah, this wall's looking good and that wall's looking good. Who's going to do this one right here in front of me? And Nehemiah goes, well, you probably care about that more than anyone does. I don't really do walls. Yeah, but you want to have a wall in front of you, don't you? Guess so. Okay, well then why don't you work on what's right in front of you? See, when they didn't know where to work, they worked on what was right in front of them. When they didn't know where to work, they just worked on what was right in front of them. So let me ask you a question. What's right in front of you? See, this is really my story. This is my story, honestly, of how I connected with our church. When I was 18, 1998, the specific year, I moved to Atlanta. I grew up in a town in Alabama, and I moved to Atlanta to go to Georgia Tech. September, I move all my stuff in, living in a dorm, joined a fraternity, signed up for every intramural team I could. Went to maybe, I don't know, half the classes that I was registered for. Didn't do great in school, but I had a lot of fun. So I'm in school, and around October, someone invites me to North Point. So I say yes. I grew up in a great home, grew up with Christian parents, fantastic people. And church had always been a big part of our life. And so I thought, yeah, I'll go to church. So I came to North Point. I'd never seen a church like this. It's amazing. It's blown away. December comes, Christmas time, around the new year, down in Jacksonville, Florida, at the Gator Bowl. Georgia Tech was playing in the Gator Bowl at the time, and I went down there with some guys just to hang out and go to the game. When I say I went down there with some guys, I literally mean it was like just a bunch of guys because I was at Georgia Tech. And the ladies that were there were amazing. There just weren't a lot of them. So just a bunch of guys went down to the game. We're at the Gator Bowl and go to the game. A couple days after the game, we're about to come back, and my cousin was down there at the time, and he's been a big mentor in my life, and at the time in his life, he was finishing up seminary, and we had a conversation. He says, hey, how's Atlanta going? I'm like, oh, I'm loving Atlanta. He's like, have you found a church? I was like, yeah, I actually started going to this church called North Point. He goes, oh, I've heard all about North Point. It's amazing. It's amazing what's happening there. I'm like, I know, I love it. He goes, well, hey, let me tell you something. Just a little piece of advice. It's for free. He said, you need to get involved there to the point where when you're not there, someone notices that you're not there. I thought, you have no idea how big it is. Listen, when I'm not there, I can assure you that no one knows that I'm not there. And part of me kind of liked it that way. But I went back to school, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to take his advice. And so I decided I was going to start volunteering. So I started with Inside Out, our environment for high school students. I didn't have a passion for it. I wasn't someone who would say, oh, I'm so passionate about teenagers. No, I still was one. So it wasn't really that. Some of you maybe thought, oh, well, you probably grew up and you really wanted to be a pastor. Nope. I wanted to play Major League Baseball. That's what I wanted to do. So that wasn't working out. So I thought, well, I guess I'll just get involved. And you know what I found? I realized after a couple years, I led a small group. I took a group of guys. They started in the 9th grade. I thought we were going to all graduate together, but it took them 4 years. It took me 5.5. So I had just a couple extra laps around at the end there. But anywho, I was there for 4 years with them, and I led their group from 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. And if you would have asked me about halfway through college, say, hey, what breaks your heart? When I started college, I would have said, I don't know that I don't have a date this Friday night. Like, that's pretty much it. You know, I don't. But by middle of college, you're going to tell you what I would have said? If you would have asked me, well, what breaks your heart? I would have said, any teenager that grows up and doesn't know that there's a God who loves them, that there's a lot that they could live for in life, but Jesus really is the greatest reason to live. That no matter what mistakes you've made in your past, that God can still love you. That God's grace obliterates any shame or any regret that you could ever have. You show me a 16-year-old that doesn't know that, that breaks my heart. That's what I would have said when I was 20, 21. You know why? Not because I'm super spiritual or because I had found my destiny. No, no, no. You want me to tell you why? Because God began to break my heart for what was right in front of me. I would imagine for some of you, that's your story as well. Maybe you volunteer in Wambaland, or you volunteer in Upstreet for elementary kids, or maybe you lead an adult group, or maybe you do mentoring with 2-to-1 or with Renew or Money Wise, and you would say, you know what, I just signed up because I felt like, wow, I could help out, you know? And now all of a sudden, your involvement has turned into way more than involvement. Your engagement has turned into way more than engagement. Now God is breaking your heart for what's right in front of you. So what is it for you? What's right in front of you that's breaking your heart? And if there's nothing, or you don't know what to do, I would urge you, I would invite you, come get involved with us. Come get involved at any one of our churches, because we believe it matters. And we believe it's literally changing people's lives. I'm not just a spokesman, I'm a customer. See, the church, just like the wall, the church is where people find safety. I'm not talking about safety like, oh, I run into the building and I feel safe. No, 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 no. See, I'm not talking about the walls of the church. I'm talking about the relationships in church. You ask people that have gotten involved, and they would say, you know what, I don't know where I would be in my life if I didn't have those relationships. I don't know where I would be in my life if there weren't people that were there that missed me when I don't show up. there would be people that would say, it's literally been my safe haven. It's literally provided safety for me and my future. For so many people, they would say, yeah, the church is where I've found community. Just like the wall provided a better community. People would say, yeah, it's actually provided me community, like legitimate relational community. Life really is better connected, and I have found that to be true. And then there are people that would say, I've literally found not just a better life, but I have found life. The church, not the building, but the group of people. That we invite people, we expose people, we tell people about, we have conversations about who Jesus is. And Jesus says that I'm the way and I'm the truth and I'm the life. He says life is found in me. He says, and not just like some kind of lame, boring, mundane life. He says, no. Abundant, amazing life is found in me, Jesus says. And there are people that say, well, yeah, and I learned that in the church. The church is who showed me that. The church is where I found Jesus. So as important as that wall was to that community, the church is just as important to this community. I saw this the other day in a very tangible, legitimate way. And as we wrap up today, I just want to tell you real quickly about this because it honestly was so staggering, it knocked me back. You remember week two of the series, how Sandra mentioned Andy, and Andy passed it on to everyone here, that she said, you know, at the end of my life, I would like for people to line up and thank me for. For her, it was her, what she's done for fostering. It's remarkable. Andy said, you ought to be able to answer this. At the end of your life, what do you want people to thank you for? We had a baby last Friday. On Thursday, the day before, I was participating with actually a funeral, a memorial service for a friend of mine. Her name is Angie Bevilacqua. She's an amazing, amazing person. I got to know her because she was a volunteer at Inside Out. She was one of our high school volunteers. And honestly, when I was literally in my car, I had got all my notes together and figured out what I was going to say. And then I'm driving down to the funeral, and I'm on the phone chatting with someone who was going to be responsible for some of the details of the funeral. I said, hey, quick question. What do you think? You think there'll be about 100 people at this funeral? Because I just thought, you know, I thought, well, hey, Angie was 52. She's a single gal. She had no kids. Any relationship, any person that was going to be there because they had personally interacted with her. And so I just thought she wasn't from Atlanta. She's not indigenous to the Atlanta area. She's actually from Michigan. I knew she had a big family, so they would all be coming in. But I just thought, I don't know, 100 people, that seems like a nice crowd. And she says, oh, no. She says, we have chairs set up for hundreds. There were over 500 people at her funeral. I was blown away, and so was her family. And you know what people were doing? They were lining up to say thank you. They were lining up to say thank you to her for the way she had impacted their life. See, she was really involved with an organization called The Lighthouse that helps families who have kids with cancer. She was very involved with an organization called 410 Bridge that helps at-risk kids in Africa and in Haiti. And she was really involved with our church. And she had gotten involved with both of those organizations because she was involved in our church. She had taken a group of girls. She had started when they were 10, and she was their small group leader in what we call Upstreet. She had walked with them all the way through the end of elementary school. She was their small group leader in middle school, and then she was their small group leader all the way through high school. She had been with these girls for about 10 years, and there were dozens of them. And then there were friends of their friends who had been impacted by her, people that had been on trips with her, people that knew her from church. It was unbelievable how many people were there. Her dad, at the very end of the memorial service, stood up in front of everyone and said, if I had 77 more years on this earth, which would be double my lifetime, I don't think I could make the same impact that my daughter made in her 52. I thought, oh my gosh. So I get in the car. I'm just I'm I had cried through the whole thing, not because I was sad. I was sad, and we're going to deeply miss Angie. But I was so inspired by her life. I thought, wow, one person making that huge impact on so many people. I got in the car, and I literally immediately called my wife, who was at home, 9+ months pregnant. And she answers the phone. I says, hey, can you talk? She's like, yeah, is everything okay? She's like, yeah, this funeral was amazing. I got to tell you all about it. She says, yeah, what's up? And I was like, look, we got to reevaluate how we're going to spend our time this year. I'm like, we got to think through like what we're doing. Like, are we investing enough? Are we thinking about other people enough? She goes, hey, I'm having a baby tomorrow. Could we talk about this next week or next month even? She was like, I would love to talk about it with you, but I'm having a baby tomorrow. I was like, yeah, you're so right. Oh my goodness, so insensitive of me. You're so right, we'll talk about this. So we are going to talk about this. But I just thought, oh my gosh, I want that kind of service. Not for me. I just wanna make my life count. I want my life to mean something in someone else's life. I don't want people to line up about me and say trivial things. I want them to be able to say, oh my goodness, I was depressed, I was down, I was frustrated, I didn't have anywhere to turn, and he was there for me. And that's what they said about Angie. It was amazing. And it was all through the church. Because Angie and I, we share something in common. We both deeply believe the words of Jesus. And you know what Jesus called you and me? For those of us that are a part of a church, he says, you are the light of the world. Wow. And so I just believe, and I think Angie believed, that if the church really is the light of the world, it should be a part of your world. And I don't mean you come and sit in a seat on a Sunday. No, I mean you're actually participating in it, engaged with it, involved in it, but also you're working on what's right in front of you. If the church really is the light of the world, I'd love to invite you to help us flip the switch, because that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get inside people's lives on their own accord. We're not going to barge in, but if they invite us in and say, yeah, we'd love to be in a relationship, we're trying to flip the switch to turn it on and let them know about the light of the world. We're trying to let people know that God's love is relentless and it's always pursuing. God's love never files for divorce. God's love never betrays. God's love never runs out, and we want people to know that. We want people to know that God's not dead, that God is alive. And he's changing people's lives, and he can change your life. We're trying to flip the switch. Let dads know the power that they can have if they would just stay involved in their kids' lives. We're trying to flip the switch in marriages where they feel like there's no hope. We're trying to flip the switch in a generation of kids so that they'll never, ever forget that God's grace is so much more powerful than any mistake they've ever made. If the church is the light of the world, and you don't know what breaks your heart, that's okay. If you don't know what to do with your broken heart, that's okay. We have a spot for you. We've got something that you could help with. It's right in front of you. You're here. There's something about this that's compelling to you. Even if you're watching online, there's something about this that's drawing you in. And we just want to let you know, don't stop just consuming it. We want you to involve yourself in it, to engage yourself in it. If you don't know where to work, we're just asking you, hey, work on what's right in front of you. Doesn't matter how old you are, doesn't matter how young you are, it doesn't matter how crazy your past is, it doesn't matter how clean your past is, we have a spot for you. If you're relational, you love to go deep and long with people, doesn't matter if you've been through some difficult seasons of life, that actually makes you even more qualified. Because you can live to tell about it, you can warn people of the mistakes that you made. The things that you did well, You could lead a group, or you could serve as a mentor to someone in all different age groups, from preschool, elementary school, adults. If you have a story about what God's done in your finances, if you have a story about how you've walked through a really difficult divorce or you've walked through a really difficult season of life, we have a spot for you. If you're wired technically, pun intended, and you have some kind of interest in running audio or video or lighting or running parking systems, we have a spot for you. If you're social, you're like Dory from Finding Nemo, you know, you've never met someone you didn't like or know, or you know, it's just easy to find a connection with them, and you find yourself, you know, I just love people, you know, we've got a spot for you. Welcoming people, hosting people, connecting people in all different age groups, with adults, with kids, with students, it doesn't matter. We have a spot for you. If the church is the light of the world, come on, help us flip the switch in somebody's life. We've got a card that hopefully you've gotten. We'd love for you to just fill it out. You can hand it to somebody no matter where you are. You can hand it to somebody on your way out. If you're online, great news. All the information that you can find on serving with us is online. We'd love for you to check it out. But my hope is that no matter who you are, that today you'll make this declaration that you're going to make the rest of your life the best of your life. That I'm going to make the rest of my life the best of my life. And you can do that if you would help us and work on what's right in front of you. There's a lot of different places you can spend your time in 2015. But would you help us here? Because the church is the light of the world. We're just trying to flip the switch. And we have a spot for you. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, I know that for some people, maybe that's challenging, or even for some people, maybe that's offensive, or maybe they think, oh, that's self-serving. God, I wish people could know our hearts. And God, we do not want anything from anyone. We genuinely want something for everyone. God, I know the difference that this has made in my own life. It's been safety for me. It's provided me community, but it's provided me life because it's connected me with you. So God, I pray that you would allow us to put our hands to what breaks our heart. God, for those that don't even know what breaks their heart, they don't even know what to do, God, I pray that today that they would say yes to your prompting, to your invitation to just get some more information, that they would just say, yes, all right, I'll do it. I'll try it. I'll give it a shot. And then God, we can't wait to see the way you're going to use each one of us, but even greater than that, the way you're going to use all of us together to do something that we could never have done on our own. We thank you so much for Jesus. We pray all this in his name. Amen.